So my wife says it all the time, and it's beautiful. She always says you can't have a testimony without a test.
Kind of feels like the biggest responsibility I have in my world right now is trying to be an awesome parent.
Really, I believe forgiveness is more for us than it really is for the other person. I kind of firmly believe that everyone is capable of and deserving of empathy, but I do believe it is a muscle that you have to exercise.
The full quote is, if you come to a great chasm in life, jump, it's not that far.
Because I feel like you never really stop growing. And if you have stopped growing, like, you're already dead in the water. You know, stagnation is synonymous to death.
You are now embarking on the imperfect experience. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Imperfect Pod, where we discuss masculinity and manhood more intentionally and purposefully. This week's guest is pretty cool. His performer name is Eric Everhard, one of the world's top male porn stars, having starred in and directed over 3,000 films. Eric is a professional coach and one of the most decorated adult performers of the 21st century. He is a leading authority on sexual and mental techniques, which can power men and bring them success in the bedroom as well as in other aspects of their lives. In addition to his wealth of practical knowledge, he holds a master's level certification in neuro-linguistic programming, or also known as NLP. On this episode, we talk about how he got into the porn industry, what it takes to be a great porn star, as well as some of the more controversial things that go into porn, whether it's, you know, even the process of getting there, some of the things that happen within the industry, whether or not it's good for young men to watch or not, especially from a learning perspective. We also touch on things like performance anxiety and some other issues that men commonly go through in the bedroom and where those come from and why they made a rise. So this is a really cool episode. You know, it's funny, Eric actually viewed my profile on LinkedIn and I was like, this is pretty cool. So I reached out to him and that's how we got connected. So yeah, we're gonna jump into this episode now. The question that I always ask my first guests is, who is one person, dead or alive, that you'd like to have over for dinner, and what would you cook for them?
Well, let me think. Dead or alive, I would have to say Dan Pena, $50 billion man. And cooking, man, it'd probably be something like along my diet. So it'd be paleo, it'd be boring, it would be healthy.
Yeah. And who is this the $50 billion man? I've never heard of him before.
Oh yeah, he's a coach based out of Scotland, and okay. He runs a 1 week masterclass for entrepreneurs where he sticks them at his castle, because he actually owns a castle, and just drills it into you how to be successful in life and everything about business.
That's cool. Yeah, I think there's so many people that you can learn from like that. But Eric, why don't you kind of give a little bit of an introduction as to who you are and your a little bit about your life story?
Oh, God. Well, where do you want me to start? I mean, by trade, I've been a professional adult video actor for the last going on 22 years. I would say I've been probably the most consistent and one of the most well-known of the last 20 years. And yeah, it's been a wild journey. That's for sure.
Yeah. And how did you, so I guess, do you prefer the term porn star or is it adult video? Like what is the more correct way?
Oh no, they're interchangeable.
Okay.
It could be porn star. It could be adult video actor. You know, sometimes it just depends the context and the people you're talking with too.
Yeah.
Some people feel more comfortable with it being adult video actor, and other people conventionally would just say, okay, you're a porno star.
Yeah. And so in regards to your experience and how you kind of got into it, I know you're a fellow Canadian like myself, but how did you get into it and how it all started?
Well, for me, it actually started, I was attending school in Vancouver, BC, because I went out there. I was attending Simon Fraser University. Was bored with that, left that program, started at a massage therapy school. And one day when I was on break, just going through their local newspaper, I saw an ad for women and couples to do a porno movie.
Mm-hmm.
I thought to myself, I said, oh, wow. And previously, before that, I had lived with a girl for a couple of years, and she used to joke. She'd be like, oh, you know, you could do porno movies. You've got a big dick, blah, 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 blah. And I said, well, thanks, sweetheart. Great. Glad you think I'm so wonderful, right? But yeah, of course, any girlfriend is going to tell you that you are amazing, whether you are or you're not, because they're in love with you.
Yeah.
I didn't really give it a lot of thought. But then, you know, when I saw the advertisement, I always thought to myself, oh, well, you know, she always said I'd be good at that. And that's what led me to start to go down the path, which, of course, you know, I called the ad and they proceeded to hang up on me, basically, as soon as I answered, which now, after being in the business for over 22 years, I totally understand, because 99% of guys cannot do the job.
Mm-hmm. And why do you think it's so hard to do the job? Just because of the pressure? Because of, like, what would make it so difficult? Like, I couldn't imagine myself doing it, but...
It's a combination of things, right? It's a combination of the pressure, whatever guilt or shame you have around sex, right? And then the fact that there is no false sense of self-confidence, right? Because... in any other aspect of life, you can have something that projects to say, hey, I'm special. I'm, you know, most people, it's, you know, they'll dress really well, or they make a lot of money, or they drive a nice car, or there's some sort of, let's call it, status symbol that they use to signify saying, hey, I'm worthy, I'm this. Now you're stripping it all away. You're saying, okay, get naked, let's see what you got. Mm-hmm. And now it's just you naked and your thoughts. And then it's, well, what thoughts are you having, mm-hmm. right? Are those thoughts going to be serving you in that moment? Or are your thoughts going to start down the rabbit hole of, oh my God, everybody's looking at me. Oh my God, am I not measuring up? Oh my God, am I going to be able to perform? Oh my God, I'm nervous. Oh my God, does she think I'm crazy or ugly or whatever, mm-hmm. right? And so that spiral then starts.
Yeah. And you have a chapter about that in your upcoming book, which was my favorite chapter, because I think it's one that I think a lot of young men relate to the most. Even if you're not doing it on camera, there's still all those pressures and anxieties and thoughts that come out of you. You know, for myself, I was raised in a Christian home. So I think that, you know, the idea of sex to me has always been in the confines of a marriage. And that's like not really the normal case anymore, or at least perceived normal. So I think it's the same there, is that I have guilt and shame around that whole conversation, that piece of the puzzle as well. And so, look, what do you think makes a great porn star then? Is it just the self-confidence that you must have, or what made you so great at it?
Well, okay, so I'm going to unpack that for you. So to me, there's five things. Like, if you were to be labeled like a great legendary, you know, porno actor, you need to have a combination of five criteria, right? Number one, you need to be able to get a hard on command in front of a bunch of people, right? Number two, you need to produce a cum shot, ideally within about a minute to 2 minutes. Number three, you should be bigger than average. You don't need to be like some crazy horse-sized guy or something, but you should be larger than average. Number four, you should be decently looking. That doesn't mean you need to be Brad Pitt, but you know, you shouldn't be the Hunchback of Notre Dame either. And number five, which I actually think is probably one of the most important, you need to be able to bring out or extract something out of the woman that you're working with that would not have occurred if you yourself were not in the scene with her.
So some of it is physical, but most of it seems mindset is what you're kind of alluding to.
When you talk about specifically what it takes to be a top, top porno actor, yes, most of it is all mindset. And when I look just at performance in general, it's all mindset, because you need to repeatedly be on top of your game every day. You're only as good as your last scene. So nobody cares what you did last month, last year, 2 weeks ago. It's, well, what are you doing right now?
Yeah.
So that kind of pressure most people are not willing to deal with, because, mm-hmm. you know, it's like you're playing the Super Bowl, but you're playing it every day.
Yeah.
From that perspective. And you see the same thing happens in sports, right? How many times will, you know, some sports team, which is supposed to go all the way, suddenly just completely choke, and you just say, how can that be? Right? You know, and maybe you have some goalie that just decides he's going to win the Stanley Cup on his own. And no matter what you do, you can't rattle his cage. The parallels are identical in a lot of ways between sports and working in the porno industry from that perspective. And the mental skills that it takes to be on top of your game every day, all day.
And when it comes to, I guess, the idea of pornography, a lot of people have this idea that in order to get into the industry, there has to be a lot of baggage that comes around with it, you know, rough family, rough parenting, or rough childhood experience. What has been your thoughts on and reflections on that? Because I know in the beginning of your book, you referenced both your parents. You and I have had the conversation that you grew up in a healthy environment. What does that conversation normally look like to you when most porn stars get into the industry in the first place?
Well, here's my viewpoint on it. Like, nobody gets into porno that had a perfect childhood, right? Now, does that mean they didn't come from a good family? No. What I'm saying is that they have some sort of trauma that occurred in their life that led them down that path. It could have been, you know, they were made fun of in high school. They were never popular. It can be things as simple as that, you know? But from my experience at the last 22 years, there's nobody normal that gets into the business. That's just how it is. Even for myself, right? Like, you know, I grew up from, I would say, the second grade until probably the 11th grade. I was the fattest kid in school, right? And then it was like, one day I made that mindset shift where it's like, okay, I'm going to fucking do something about this. And that's what led to me, you know, I joined the football team. So then I became one of the players on the football team. Then I discovered through that, I discovered weightlifting. And then obviously then I went on a whole dramatic physical change because then I got seriously into weightlifting and seriously into dieting. And then people now are like, how do you have a six pack at 43? I'm like, have you ever seen me eat?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I can tell you, you know, people are like, how can you do that every day? I said, well, that is the benefit of what I went through. Right. Because you always have to look at whatever trials and tribulations that you go through. There will be a positive aspect out of it. Right. So it's like, even you look at what people talk about, you know, with sort of like, you know, fat shaming and, you know, having been fat, I'm like, well, I don't know that fat shaming is necessarily a bad thing because it's not healthy to be that way, right? Like, it's not, you know, being obese is not healthy.
Yeah.
So in some ways there does need to be something that'll make you take action. And for me, that's what it was, right? It's like, okay, you can only be tortured by other kids so often until you're like, okay, I'm going to do something. But then that ends up being a blessing because now it sticks with you your whole life. Mm-hmm. Like, everybody that I know that I went to high school with, you know, they're all fat and drink beer. And here I am, you know, a physical specimen. So you just have to reframe bad aspects of your life because they might be bad in the beginning, but that doesn't mean that they're going to be bad in the end.
I totally agree. And, you know, I'm a bit overweight myself and I kind of grew up that way. And I agree with you. Like, I don't see fat shaming. I've never taken fat shaming personally because I'll look at myself and I'll be like, yeah, I'm overweight. Yeah, what they say is like not accurate. Like, I just happen to love chips just as much as I love vegetables. And I just have a self-control issue. And so whenever there's complaints about fat shaming, I'm like, sometimes it's a safety measure. Like, sometimes it's, you have to be held accountable by your friends. I'm not saying people on the street should be calling you names and whatnot, but at the same time, there has to be, at least this is just how I respond. Your friends have to hold you accountable to a measure. You have to be able to look at your mindset and still have that self-love and self-confidence and not take it personally, but still understand that there's no healthy way to be overweight in a lot of ways. So I totally agree with you there.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and when I look at the whole trajectory of my life, like, I sit back and I say, wow, like, that was amazing. How did I go from that kid in high school to having all the international success that I have? Right. And so,
And so
from that perspective, in my mind, it's like, well, anything is possible. I'm living proof.
Yeah. And there's so many people that are living proof to that, and you just have to seek them out and find them. And with social media, it's pretty easy to find those people. But, you know, in regards to international fame and just within the whole porn industry itself, is it easier for male actors in the porn industry or harder? And I'm really interested in hearing your thought process on that. I know from things that I've heard and read that kind of women are more cycled through the industry. They have less longevity, and men seem to have more, but there's less of them. So I'm really curious on hearing your thoughts behind that.
Okay. So, well, what you said is exactly true. The good male performers have longevity. Mm-hmm. That has really been the key. Though now how the whole industry has changed, I would say the last 15 years, it's getting really murky. But you always had the same guys simply because they were the best at doing the job. And it was not easy to replace them. Mm-hmm. Not to say it's easy to replace a woman, but the jobs are completely different. You know, we used to say in the business, we would always say, well, the girl sells the movie, the guy sells the scene. Because the box cover at the time, you know, they had box covers, you know, they'd always just do us a beautiful picture of a woman. Like, the guy is nowhere on the box to sell the movie. But when you actually watched the movie, the whole selling point was how good was the male performer, because he was what was going to drive the female and bring something out of her. Mm-hmm. You know, because from that perspective, you know, the woman is like a Ferrari, right? If you don't know how to drive a Ferrari, it's no different than a Hyundai. Like, it absolutely isn't, right? So if you are, to use the analogy, if you're Michael Schumacher, then you can push that Ferrari as far as it can go, and it can go as fast as it can. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, you're just, you know, well, it's just another car.
Yeah. And in regards to your international fame, we kind of had this conversation before, but is it more men that recognize you than women in public, or what is kind of your experiences with that?
Oh, yeah, no, it's definitely more men. I mean, I've been recognized by a lot of women, but predominantly it'll be men.
Yeah.
And what's interesting about that, too, is you can see often the guilt and shame about recognizing me come up, because I'll get stared at in public during the day, but people will all come up to me to get a photo or autographs, like, in a bar at night after they've had some alcohol.
Yeah.
But predominantly, yeah, no, it's always the guys, and it's fascinating too when you get somebody that they recognize you and they don't remember where.
Yeah.
And then you have to call them out on it. And it's funny if it's especially in front of their friends, because they'll be like, I'm like, well, you internet, porno. And they say, oh, no, I never watched that. I said, you didn't recognize me from a Wheaties box, okay?
Yeah. This is the only place my face is all over.
Yeah, this is the only place my face has been, so trust me. I know where you saw me. Let's not.
That's funny. But in regards to even just your experiences with sex, and porn is often proclaimed as a performance, or, you know, not really real, it's fantasy. What are your thoughts on young men, especially watching porn? Because I have some thoughts about it, and I think it can be unhealthy from a certain age if there's no dialogue behind watching it and the reason behind watching it. But I'm really interested in hearing your thoughts from someone who's in the industry.
Well, okay, so there's two things going on there, okay? So the first thing you said is porn basically real? It is real. What you are seeing in the moment is not real, but there are real elements. So let me explain that. So, you know, we're getting paid to put on a performance, right? When the camera is rolling, that is the predominant thing that's going through everybody's mind. It's what's going through the girl's mind. It's what's going through my mind. It's what's going through the director's mind, right? And the level of quote unquote reality and less performance that you get is also dictated by who is directing the particular scene. Because some directors, they want to tell you exactly every single thing to do, which allows for no spontaneity, no creativity, no genuine connection, nothing. And then you have other directors that try to almost be like a fly on the wall. And in those instances, you get much more reality of what's going on. But what people don't realize is that when the camera goes off, then you get absolute reality. Because I could be working with a girl, and as soon as they cut and, you know, everybody goes to take a break, we'll keep fucking. You know, we both our masks come off and we're just sitting there having fun because we're no longer beholden to make a performance. Mm. Right. So that's what I mean. There's different levels between what you're seeing based on, you know, who's directing it. Also, you know, is the camera rolling? Is the camera off? And also what everybody is thinking, because we are coming from the place of we're trying to create performance art for the viewing audience.
Yeah. I think it's so fascinating that you said, you know, once the cameras are off, it's like you're free to be yourselves. You're free to. So which one do you enjoy more? Is there an enjoyment level between them? Is one strictly work and one is more for pleasure, or are they both pleasure?
Oh no, I would say it's one is definitely more pleasure. One is definitely more work. The only thing with the work aspect, and I've seen this many times, and I've also seen it with some women that have gotten into the porno business purely because they wanted to experience a fantasy, right? Is that then it allows you a very safe space to fulfill whatever your fantasy was. So in that way, you know, you are having this experience, and yes, it's a performance, but it's also very enjoyable because it's something that you wanted to experience. So then you get that overlap there.
Mm. Is that kind of fantasy experience not something always that's available in personal lives, or what makes it kind of so much different on camera?
For most women, not at all. Okay. And I'll tell you why, because exactly what we were speaking. So I've known lots of women that, you know, their big fantasy is they'd like to be with two guys at the same time. Mm-hmm. You ask most women out there about how that civilian experience has gone down for them, absolutely horrific. Because remember what I said before, 99% of guys cannot do what I do, mm-hmm. right? So if you have, let's just say you have a section of the population that struggles with performance anxiety, if they're at home with a girl that they know with the lights off, no cameras, no nothing. Now add a complete stranger in the mix that is another dude that is staring at them. Every girl that I ever talked to that got in the business said, yep, I wanted this fantasy. I took two guys home and they were both woodless. So they would go and enter the porno business to actually live out the fantasy. Cause it's like, well, okay, I have two professionals. Everybody's hard and ready to go. And okay, we can do this. So they get to live out their fantasy in a very controlled environment, and they know it's going to happen.
So is it frequent to see women only really join the scene for maybe one or two videos to live out just one or two fantasies, or is that not really that common?
It's not overly common, but I've definitely over the years seen it a bunch of times. And it would usually be women that would come, you know, they would have come from sort of swingers background a lot of the time, mm-hmm. or maybe they were just, you know, housewife in somewhere in the Midwest, and you know, her and her husband were kind of kinky, and she just always had this little fantasy where she wanted to, you know, do a gangbang or something like that, right? Mm-hmm. So they would enter because they wanted a safe, controlled experience. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, when you come into the business, especially professional, it is very safe and very controlled from that aspect.
And we'll get into that a bit later, but with the second part of the question that we were talking about was, do you think it's kind of dangerous for young men to watch porn at an early age, being that it's not really clear how fantasized the world of pornography is and how kind of orchestrated it is? So I'm really interested in hearing your opinions on that.
Yeah, well, here's the thing with people watching porno that is the only thing that I get worried about, is the fact that they are not able to comprehend that what we are doing is performance art. And so that is the one thing where I think, especially a lot of guys are getting, well, and women are getting very kind of screwed up, because they'll see us do things and they think that must A, feel good, or that's how it should be done, which in a lot of cases, it's neither. I've done tons of things that it feels horrible, but it looks great for camera, right? Same thing as the actresses. They've done lots of things. It looks amazing. And as soon as we are done doing it, we say, God, thank God that's over, right? But mm-hmm. you'll never see that, right?
Yeah.
So that is one of the things that that I don't think people are paying attention to is the fact that we are doing performance art. And, you know, if you go watch a crazy movie, like you watch, you know, Bruce Willis in Die Hard or something, and, you know, he mows down, I don't know, I think it's like 60 people in the movie, has like two scratches on him, right? Like we all believe like, oh yeah, that can happen, right? No, I mean, we're very cognizant that, you're not taking on one guy against 100 terrorists and winning. You know, it's just not going to happen. But somehow people forget that when they're watching porno, because they know, well, okay, actual sex is happening, which is true. But it does not mean that what we are doing is fun or enjoyable when we're trying to create a visually based product.
Mm-hmm. And can you kind of give some industry secrets as to what you find unenjoyable or no?
Oh, God. Well, I mean, you'll have... Just for example, I mean, everybody wants some crazy face fuck deep throat blowjob. I mean, I can't tell you how many times over the years I've bled from that because, it's like saying, you know, if you imagine someone says, well, are there sharks in the water? In the water, and you say, well, is the water salty, right? Well, are there teeth in a mouth? Well, yeah, you know. So you got to be gentle with those things, and you know when you get the porno, which is more aggressive and you're really trying to make it look very strong. I mean, those things happen. I've been cut more times than I can remember now, you know, so it doesn't feel good.
Yeah.
Right. Like the whole time I'm doing it, I'm literally like grimacing in the sense of, you know, I know what I'm doing this for. She knows why I'm doing it. So it's not like we don't have an understanding between the two of us. She doesn't like it either, but she's like, okay, well, you know, and you have that sort of relationship, especially a lot of the times with the actress, where it's like you understand how far you can push and they understand how far you need to push, and you just find that common ground where it's like, well, we're not pushing too much and everybody's still comfortable, this is okay, but we're creating the art here.
I think it's so interesting that you kind of alluded to that those things are not enjoyable, because even for me, I think a lot of young men see that image when they're young. And so I think, I don't know the statistics on this, but I feel like young men watch porn much younger than women do. And if in the first sexual experience, they're just going off the man's brain about what he's seen in a porno, I think it gets very dangerous about what could take place, because they think what that performance art is fun and exciting. And the girl's just like, okay, this is what normal sex is. And to me, it's a lot more based on the conversations that the parents have to have with the children. But at the same time, there must be a lot of confusion going on there in the sex world.
Well, and you got to think about it too. I mean, I feel really bad for young kids, especially today, because, you know, you look at how unfiltered the internet is. I mean, when I was growing up, I mean, if you got your hands on a Playboy magazine, it was like gold. You're like, oh my God, how did I get one of these? I mean, now just click on your browser, you could see the hardest hardcore of whatever in, you know, 2 seconds.
Which
that part I don't think is healthy, because you have, you know, you get the young kids, they don't understand, you know, that this is performance art, and they're just, and that's the only education they get. But you can't even fault the porno companies. You know, they're just simply supplying what their consumer wants, basically. And nobody else is picking up the slack to supply anything else. You know, it's like, what educators out there are actually saying, well, you know, here's some material, you know, little Johnny and Susie could watch. No, everybody has their head in the sand like an ostrich, just pretending, we're just not going to deal with it. Yeah. And then they'll complain that, well, you know, like porno is educating the children. It's like, but you haven't given another viable option.
Yeah.
Come out with another viable option and maybe, you know, the kids aren't going to be doing it. You know, I don't think kids, especially young kids, should be watching it, because it's messing them up. And I can see that more and more. You know, I've been in the business now, you know, 22 years. So I've seen that whole progression, right? Because, you know, when I started, you know, I was working with girls that are, you know, were 18, right? And I started, I was 21. You know, now I'm 43. I still work with girls that are 18. And I can see how that generation of 20 years, the way that the kids think about things has dramatically shifted.
What are some things that you think have shifted then?
Oh, I mean, you definitely see a much more casual attitude towards sex, I would say. That's been one of the big ones. And then you definitely see that how they think about sex, they are thinking of it through the lens of what they watched on porno, because it was only, you know, let's call it the last 17 years, right? That you could easily, with the click of a button, get your hands on porno online. You know, before that, it was like, you know, when it was the same, like when I was a kid, like you had to wait till you were 18, you know, because that was the age in my province. And 18, you were an adult, and then you could go to the video store, right?
Yeah.
So even just being 18 made a difference. You know, it's like, you think about it, you know, it's like, well, you don't give a 7-year-old a license to drive a car, right? Mm-hmm. Like, even if they could, like, would you trust a 7-year-old to drive your, you know, Mercedes around the block? No. But at the same time, it's like click of a button, you know, little Johnny at 7 could be on whatever, watching and just absorbing. And that's the thing, you know, kids are impressionable.
Yeah. You
know, they model what they see, not what they hear.
Yeah. And the websites try to put these, they put like fake I'm 18 filters on it, and anyone can just say, yeah, I'm 18. Like, there's no proof behind that either. And so it's, I know what you mean. It's pretty dangerous.
Yeah. And well, but I mean, even with that, you can't fault the companies, because they just follow what the government says, right?
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, it's the governments are like, well, if you put this, you know, good enough, right? And yeah, it means nothing. You can, you know, there's no proof of age required for anything. So.
Yeah. But I'm interested, one of the words you said there about the huge difference between what it was when you started and now is that the approach to sex is more casual, which I would think is pretty normal for the pornography industry. But are you saying like the idea is not?
No, I mean, it's always been that way somewhat within the industry. But what I'm saying is I've noticed it outside of the industry.
Mm.
Look at what the new world order is. I mean, now we have, you know, it's this hookup culture, right? So it's like every, you know, it's Tinder, it's this, it's that. More and more casual sex is just, you know, it's just commonplace. And you, mm-hmm. and you see that attitude even more amongst the actresses that I've seen. Like, just when I look at a screenshot, you know, stepping like meta back of all the last 20 years, that would be one of the things that I've seen.
Okay. Like, what is your thought on that then? Do you kind of think that, what's your thoughts on hookup culture as a performance or as a scene? Do you think it's kind of destructive in regards to sex as a whole?
There's positives and negatives to it. And I'm going to go into those now as I see them, because, you know, sometimes to understand what you're dealing with, you have to have been able to see the extremes of it, right? So, you know, I've gone to the furthest edge of sexuality that most people would ever experience, right? So I've gone there, I've seen it. So do I think it's good to be on that far end? No, because that has destructive parts to it. At the same time, what I do think is you need to have an understanding of what it is that you actually like. So to me, it's like, well, I wouldn't sit there saying, well, you just need to keep hooking up, because I've seen so many guys, they get stuck in that cycle, right? Like, there's a number in their mind of mm-hmm. like, well, if I just fuck 50 girls, or maybe the guy's like, if I just fuck 100 girls, right? It's like, man, I fucked over 5,000. Like, there is no number you're ever going to get to that is going to heal whatever is going on inside of you. Mm-hmm. The number doesn't exist. If I can do 5,000 and still I'm searching for that thing that I'm trying to heal, your 50 is not going to do shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So that's not the thing that you need to be actually looking for. What you mm-hmm. need to do, from my professional perspective, is you want to have an understanding of what you like. And as long as you understand what it is that you specifically like, then if you find it, you don't need to search any further, because there definitely are biological differences between couples, between men and women, that are insurmountable when it comes to having a good sexual relationship. So I think there are a lot of times where you have relationships that fall apart, and, you know, ultimately they'll fall part because the sex doesn't line up for the two people. It's the paradox of you're looking for somebody that you have, you know, the same values, the same commonalities, et cetera, et cetera. But so many times, if the sex doesn't work out, it doesn't matter about, you know, the values, this and that, because ultimately, if this is your partner and you're going to be intimate with just them for the rest of your life, well, you need to be happy. Mm-hmm. You know, otherwise what happens? Somebody ends up straying, somebody starts looking for something else, right? And it's always that, you know, they'll stay married because, well, I like his personality and I like the values, but I like the sex over here, or, you know, or from the woman's perspective, you know, someone else. So that is what I think is one of the things. It's like, well, you have to understand exactly what it is that you like so that when you see it and that you find it, you can say, okay, here I'm willing to commit and I'm willing to go in because I know this satisfies that part of the relationship, which in a lot of ways is extremely important, because if it's not there, like I said, you can have the best personality in the world, but if you actually have a sex drive and it doesn't match up, you're going to tire really quickly. And that's not going to last over, you know, 10, 15 years.
Mm-hmm. And in regards to that, do you think two people that build an emotional bond or, you know, in a relationship that are really solid, they can be find or create that comfortability together? Do you think that's a really important aspect? Or do you think that two people that really just don't have that sexual coordination or matching, I guess, won't ever find it?
Well, no, and this is what I'm talking about. There are biological differences. Mm-hmm. You cannot, you know, so all sorts of ways that shows up, right? And I know I've experienced this throughout my whole career. It's like, you know, every girl's mouth structure, jaw structure, lips, vagina, everything, it's all completely different. And so I talk about it in my book. I say it's the lock and key theory, mm-hmm. right? It's like, well, if I have my key and I try and get into my apartment, it fits, it opens, it's perfect. I take my key, I try and get in your apartment, well, I'll be there all night, right? Just doesn't fit. And you have the same biological things that happen, and people don't realize that. And those are insurmountable, because mm-hmm. you cannot change someone's pelvic structure. You cannot change the shape of their dick, the size of their dick. You can't, like, there's a lot of things you cannot change. You know, if someone's got a very small jaw structure with, you know, the sharpest teeth since jaws, you cannot change those factors, mm-hmm. right? So a lot of times you'll get this information, you know, from these, you know, self-professed gurus, and they'll say, well, you know, you just need to be more open. You need to talk to your partner more. It's like, well, no, like yeah. that's like all the talking in the world is not, you know, making those daggers in her mouth go away. If that is a sexual experience that I'm looking for and I would like to enjoy, mm-hmm. right? Like that's not changing. So that's what I'm talking about, where emotionally and, you know, talking to your partner about what you like, yes, that's all possible. But if there is a actual physical, biological difference, there's no amount of talking that is ever going to change that.
Mm-hmm. And so in regards to your personal life, you think it's then very important to be with a woman who satisfies not your pornographic sexual needs, but your, like, just biological sexual needs.
Yeah.
And so in regards to your personal life, you know, I think there's often this idea that porn stars outside of, you know, filming on television or filming for the cameras, the sex isn't seem normal and it's not intimate. What's your projection or thoughts about that?
Oh, I mean, that's just a complete lie. I've had people ask me that, and I'm like, no, I mean, the sex is as intimate as ever. Mm-hmm. I'd say in some ways even more so, because you're so excited that there's not a camera and a crew standing around, right? When you get to just do whatever you want to do in the moment when you want to do it, it's the best thing ever.
Yeah.
So there's no problems with that. And, you know, the interesting thing when you've done the business as long as I have, you start to learn that sex and emotions can be compressed together or they can be separate. And so most people have them where they're collapsed together, you know, sex equals love, love equals sex, etc. And then when you've been in the business a long time, you realize that, well, sex can be just sex and love can be just love, right? So it's almost like in some ways, well, let's call it like a maneuver of consciousness, where you're actively separating them in your mind for as long as they need to be separate, and then you're collapsing them when they need to be collapsed. But it's the acknowledgement that they can be collapsed and they can be separate. And a lot of people don't think about it that way, but it does actually happen.
Yeah, and that's something that I would say would tie in more to the mindset thing as well that we were talking about earlier, is that separation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then there was a really interesting thing that you brought up earlier in the conversation when talking about unenjoyable and enjoyable moments on the camera, where you said, you know, sometimes you're doing what you don't want to do because you're trying to build that fantasy for people. And I really wanted to go into that within the porn industry, because there was a section in your book, one of your interludes, where you're talking about a specific scene where you had a girl come in and there was alcohol involved and you didn't realize how much wine she had had. And you know, I guess in some ways in the book, it could come across as, I guess, non-consensual, or like at least from a third party view. But you and I had the conversation before that you're there, you do the job and it was fine. But I really wanted to hear more about your perspective on doing what you don't want to do or not comfortable doing on the camera because it's your job and that's just kind of what happens within the industry.
Well, I mean, in that particular case, you know, everything was consensual because beforehand, you know, we everybody knew what we were going to do, right? Like this was all laid out. There were no surprises, you know, the agents there, everybody's there. So, you know, and we would always go through everything with every girl. You know, she always knew way before, like, what kind of scene is it? Who are you working with? What's going on? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right? So like, you know, long before the scene happened, you know, she knows everything that's going on. And, you know, like I said, that day in particular, you know, that I talk about in the book, she was a little nervous. So she asked if she could have one glass of wine. And we said, oh, well, if you want to have one glass of wine, that's not a problem. You know, take your one glass of wine and, you know,
yeah,
that'll calm your nerves. Fine. What we didn't realize was that she kept refilling that glass of wine, right? Which, you know, again, was not, you know, that was not on our side at all, right? Like we thought, oh, we just gave her one glass of wine, and here, you know, by the end of it, she's, you know, she's hammered.
Yeah.
But at no time was it that she didn't want to do the scene, because if that was the case, then we would have just, you know, hey, wrap this up, we'll, you know, go.
Yeah. And so within the context of, you know, just the porn industry as a whole and doing things that you know, that hurt or, you know, things that are painful, is that kind of a choice that a lot of porn stars are able to make beforehand? Like they know what they sign up for. This is a scene, or is it not really known beforehand? Like maybe they know.
No, everybody knows what they're getting into. There's no illusions about that. You know, the downside is, I'm going to use a sports analogy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So let's use NFL football. Well, you play NFL football, right? Do you think you're going to make it through every game and never have an injury?
No,
right? Now, if you get injured, right, maybe you twist your ankle, how many people keep playing?
A lot.
It's the same thing. It's yeah. The same thing, right? So, you know, maybe you're like, oh, well, okay, you know, shit, you know, this happened and seen this happen. I mean, like I said, I can't tell you how many times I've been cut and I've, you know, and sliced bad by tooth, sharp nails, something. I never quit a scene.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, guys, you know, I sit down, I'm like, give me 15 minutes, you know, let me get my thoughts together here. And, you know, and then I'll get my head in the right space, you know, and that again was that mental training. It's like, well, how can you quickly get your head where it needs to be, where you need to be focused to be able to, again, get an erection in an uncomfortable situation?
Mm-hmm. And in regards to, I guess, that pain, when it's without, like after a scene where maybe it's painful, how long is your recovery time then? Or are you pretty quick to get back into another video and shoot afterwards?
Oh, yeah, it's 24 hours.
Okay.
I mean, unless you really, really got nicked like super bad, but I mean, you know, usually like 24 hours, you know, 24 hours, 48 hours, you're fine.
Yeah. But even taking that whole conversation outside of the realm of porn, you and I had the conversation about consent and how, you know, in your book, you talk a lot about how it's behavior based and it's the highest form of information and how much you have to learn her body. And, you know, sometimes words aren't always said in sexual interactions. And now we're hearing so much only yes means yes. And you had some thoughts on that, that I think were really interesting and kind of going into that conversation.
Well, yeah. So, you know, here's the thing. And when I was studying up in San Francisco and I got my my master's NLP certification, we would often talk about the concept of behavior. And the one thing that has always stuck with me that the professor would talk about is he said, well, you know, behavior is the highest form of information. And when you think about it, it's so true, right? Because your behavior is showing what your true thoughts, intentions, wants, that's what's showing through, right? So what you say doesn't always match your behavior. And so the thing with about sexual interactions, and you know, you look at today's situation, you know, particularly in America, because over here in Europe, it's not really the same. But yeah, you have that, you know, it's all about consent these days. But the problem with that is that consent is only ever implicit. Like consent is never explicit, right? And this is where I feel like a lot of young guys really start to get confused. And I feel really bad for them because they don't want to take any action with a woman because they're afraid of getting, you know, me too'd. She's going to say this, she's going to say that, right? So then they don't take action. And then every woman out there is bitching that no guy takes any action. So every woman will say, where's the real man anymore? Well, you know, you're not supposed to take action, right? And the thing is, you know, when you're having an intimate interaction with somebody, you need to be paying attention to all the cues that they are giving you, all the behavior, because that is what's actually letting you know that they are happy with what's going on, that they're enjoying it, that you can proceed further. And it can be, you know, you look at things so simple as going out on a date. Well, you know, I mean, what do most guys do? It's like, well, at some point, you're either going to try and put your, you know, you're going to put your hand on her thigh, you're going to put your hand around her, like you're going to be doing something, right? It's like kind of step one. And then, of course, her behavior is going to tell you what's going on. You know, it's like, well, if you put your hand on her thigh and she smacks it away viciously, okay, that's a no, right? But, you know, if you put it there and she's smiling, everything, it's like, okay, you know, but at no point did you say, excuse me, miss, would you mind if I put my hand on your thigh right now? She's going to look at you like, you know, I mean, it's going to be the most unsexual, like if she had any sexual inkling in her, it is going to be dried up like a raisin right then and there. And she's just going to be like, yeah, you're not worthy. So that is the thing that a lot of young men are facing now, where there is this what women respond to, and then there is this nouveau woke culture of what they say they will respond to, but they still don't overlap.
And I, like, for my own personal experience, like I always ask for consent if I'm going to go in for a kiss or something like that, because like that is a fear of mine. I think it's like, to me, if I find a girl who kind of loses interest because of that, then I'm no longer interested in being with her, because I'm just trying to be thoughtful and communicating. But I do know that also is unattractive to women sometimes in asking. And I'm like, well, shit, now what do I do? And it can be really confusing for a lot of young men to understand what's happening. And I totally understand that no means no. That makes so much sense. But when you tie in only yes means yes, like there's just a lot of gray area. Oh, there.
It's all gray. There's a lot of maybe in there.
Yeah.
There's a lot of maybe, and that's the problem.
Yeah.
You know, sex is that's how it goes. Right. And so you can't make it black and white. And that's why I said you know, as you get a lot of experience, then you're reading body language, you're reading cues. Like, and that's really what all sex is about. Because you want to know how to get a girl off. Well, you're not sitting there asking her, you're feeling. You're like, what am I feeling through her body? Mm-hmm. Right. And that's when you get to sexual mastery. Because then you know what's happening because you're feeling inside of her what's happening, and you're paying attention to all the cues. You know, I've had so many women over the last 20 years, they'll ask me like, God, you like, how do you know what you're doing? And it's like, because I'm paying fucking attention.
Yeah.
like I am reading, like your body is telling me everything I have to do.
Yeah.
You just have to listen. Because it's highly likely if you were to ask her, she is not able to articulate it in a way that you would understand anyways.
Mm.
You know, because men and women do not communicate at all the same way.
Well, I just think it's so fascinating, just the whole conversation around it. And I really have no problems with being that forward and that consensual. But at the same time, you see a lot of, like, I'm in a couple men's groups on Facebooks, and it's really hard to see how that's attractive to a lot of women, because it's, to some women, it's just not the way they actually want it. And I think that conversation kind of speaks for everyone. But you also said consent is only implicit, not explicit. And so what you're saying basically is that even if they say yes, consent isn't explicit, or kind of what was your thought process behind that?
What I mean by that is it's like most women, they do not want to sit there and actually have that conversation because it's not attractive to them. So most of the time, they want to give you consent in an implicit way. You know, women love that, right? It's the same thing, like if you look at a bar, like let's just take going to a bar, okay? If there was, you know, some sort of explicit consent from women, they would be coming up and asking you for your phone number. Do any of them do that? I mean, you got maybe 1% out there that will, right? What do? They stare at you, right? They give you that eye contact long enough where they're hoping that implicitly you understand, hey, you should come talk to me because I'm staring at you, right? Mm-hmm. But again, women work in this very covert, implicit way, and that's just how they operate.
Yeah, and I've had that conversation with a couple of my friends too, just talking about how I think the whole thing just comes down to more effective communication. And sometimes women don't say yes, but they also don't say no, but they clearly want it. And it has to be on both the man and the woman to communicate consent. And I feel like a lot of the times it's neither group confirming or denying either way. And so it's like, that it just is included in all the gray area around the whole conversation. It's like you as a woman have to put in the work to communicate effectively as well. It shouldn't just be on the man to communicate that goal.
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't see that necessarily happening. I mean, it seems in some way that, you know, a lot of things are just almost like certain things are just hardwired in us. And I don't know, you know, from how many thousands of years ago, but, you know, women, you know, they want to be pursued. You know, they don't want to be the pursuer, mm-hmm. right? And then that whole, you know, no matter how they feel consciously about something, they will respond in a totally different manner.
Mm-hmm.
And I've just seen that over my career so many times where, you know, the woman will, you know, she'll say she wants something, but then her body responds to something totally different.
Mm-hmm.
So there's always, you're going to run into a lot of disconnect with that. And I don't think there's any right or wrong answer. I think it's just, you know, like I said, it's gray and you just have to say, well, okay, that is what male-female, you know, dynamics is. Mm-hmm. It's murky and you just have to navigate it the best that you can.
Yeah. And I think it is important to teach consent and teach communication, because I think I would hope that we can make that change as a generation, as a society, for the better. And I try to be part of that, but it just can be also very much based on the woman that you're out with and seeing those differences as well. And you kind of have to shape and understand, and you've had a lot of experience with women, but like, it's just, I found girls who operate very well. Like, I don't think anyone would ever get mad at you for asking, but it does take away from some of the romanticism that is part of the whole process of sex. And that can be, you know, I've been with girls who've been very turned on by it, but I've also been with girls who've been very turned off by it. And I'm like, well, I'll continue to do it because to me.
Well, that's a choice. But like I said, you know, I mean, that's purely a choice, but I think there does need to be an understanding that you can have consent implicitly.
Yes, you know? I would agree.
If you are paying attention, you can completely have implicit consent. Because like I said, they're by their very nature, they want to let you know in sort of covert ways. Like I said, it's the same thing, like I said, at a bar. You know, you'll get those, that small percentage that'll actually come up as a woman and talk to you. But most of them are going to use eye contact. They're going to use some sort of lesser known thing to say, hey, you know, well, come over here, give me some attention.
It's all about the chase. It's all about the games.
And most women, you know, they will be turned off if they have to go approach a man. They're like, well, no, if he's a man that's worthy, he's going to come approach me. So that's where I said you end up in the same kind of thing where sexually the woman wants you to lead. Mm-hmm. Right? She wants you to lead the interaction. She doesn't want to have to. Because, you know, the more she has to lead, the more she has to step into her masculine polarity and less into her feminine polarity. Mm-hmm. And then ultimately, you know, if you've ever studied anything from David Deida, I mean, that's what kills a lot of attraction in the end, you know, because as soon as she becomes more masculine and you step more into your feminine, then you become just buddies, and buddies don't have sex.
Yeah. I just think it's such an interesting component of the conversation, because so many girls like to be chased and play those games that I know of. Like, a lot of my friends aren't that way, but there's just so many different types of people. And I would say that, you know, the hookup culture has really created a lot of more gray around it. But I would probably argue that a lot of my friends that I know that hook up quite a bit aren't explicitly asking for sex, but they're both coming out of it really enjoying it. And then I'm sure there's some times where they could both come out of it saying, you know, that wasn't that enjoyable, I don't want to do it again, but it was still consensual. And I think that there's just so much, like, as we said, there's just so much gray with all of it. And I think that's such an important part of the conversation to have with men and young men, is to really figure out what the safe way of doing it is, because there's just a lot of confusion amongst young men about what that looks like. And I have my thoughts about it. Like, as I said, I'm totally comfortable asking for consent with every girl I've been with, but I know that that's not what every girl wants. And just having that conversation, I think, is really important for young men in their journey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%.
But I think that's really all the questions I had for you. I don't know if there's any other things that, you know, you got going on in your mind at the end of this podcast that you'd like to share, but those were all the questions I went down. I think we covered a lot more in depth about some of the things that even we discussed on our first conversation, and it allowed for this flow of conversation really well. But is there anything else that's kind of on your mind?
No. I mean, the only thing I would say is that, the journey that I've gone through, you know, where I've gone from, professional porno actor to men's coach has been actually interesting and extremely fulfilling, because, you know, it gives me an opportunity to take the 22 years of knowledge that I've had and condense it into a very understandable, workable system of being for men that I think a lot of them can learn from. Where it's like, okay, like, here I can give you all this information, but you don't actually have to go through the journey that I had to go through, right? Mm-hmm. To try and get it. It's like, here is a way I could impact and move the needle in your sex life and in your performance ability today without you needing that 22 years of experience. So for me, that's been extremely fulfilling.
Yeah. And you know, you have written a book, Unleash Your Sexual Superpowers, A Porn Star's Guide to Sexual Mastery. You shared that with me. To everyone that's listening, I would say it's not out yet. And when does it come out?
It comes out October 6th.
October 6th. So I was fortunate enough to get an early read of it. I think it's a very graphic novel, but at the same time, it is really informative about the female body. It kind of goes into more detail about some of your stories, about how you got into porn, your journey through it, about the mindsets and just understanding a woman's body. So I think I got a lot of value out of it. And to anyone listening, I think you should definitely check it out. But in regards to, you know, even just your thought process writing it and now becoming a men's coach, why was that like the next step for you? And why do you want, what is your purpose and goal for helping men, I guess?
Well, I mean, my purpose and goal was that I wanted them to be able to not have to go through the experiences that I went through, right? I wanted to say, well, you know, how can we prevent you from needing to navigate the murky waters the exact same way? And it was like, well, if I've been blessed to have had this experience for the last 22 years that very few people ever get a chance to have, what is the biggest thing that I could take out of that experience to be able to give to other people? And that's just what constantly came up throughout my life, time and time again, the last 10 years. People would be asking me for advice, you know, and they'd be like, hey, well, what about this? What about that? And then I had a couple lovers in Los Angeles, these girls, and they would say, God, like, I don't know what you're doing, but it's amazing. You need to tell my ex-boyfriend how to do this, or you need to tell these people this. And so that's what started to trigger the thought process in my head. Well, you know, I've been doing this for so long, but maybe I should write down this information and explain to people why I'm doing it and mm-hmm. how, and actually put it down in a way that people could, the layman could easily understand and wrap their head around and put into practice. Mm-hmm. Because you have so many areas of sexuality, right? It's like, well, you've got physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual. But still, at the end of the day, sex is a physical act, mm-hmm. right? So if you don't properly understand the biomechanics of it, how to control your mind, how to control what your penis is doing, all these things, it's like, well, then it's tough to have a really good sex life.
Yeah. One last question I guess I have for you then is, when it comes to men who really struggle with sexual performance and sexual anxiety, what is your one or two tips for them in navigating that experience? Because I think so many young men go through it, and none of us want to admit it. Like, I would say I definitely have gone through it. But what is your one or two tips for that?
Well, one of the number one things that, well, I'm going to go into a bunch of them actually, but one of them is the idea of thinking or doing, right? Because when you are 100% laser focused on doing something, right, your brain is no longer thinking. You can't actually have the two things going on at the same time. You know, I'm sure you've heard a million times where people talk about multitasking, right? Mm-hmm. And people actually say, well, multitasking actually doesn't exist. It's just the idea of multitasking is you're flopping between two things back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. So it seems like you're doing two things at the same time, but you're not. You're either giving one thing attention or the other, right? Mm-hmm. And if you actually go all in on attention with one thing, laser focused, then you're not thinking, right? So what I always recommend, it's like, well, okay, you have to figure out what it is that you want to be doing. Right? That is key. It has to be something that turns you on that you want to be doing. And then you need to focus on the woman and take the focus off of you. And you need to be 100% laser focused on what you are doing with her. That's number one. Number two, you know, you got to set yourself up for success. So what does that mean? Well, there's a lot of different ways that happens. So for example, if you know that there is something that's going to turn you off, well, you don't go there, you know, you don't do it. You know, a lot of times in the sexual arena, people feel beholden to do something for the other person, which is good, but not if it's going to prevent you from being able to perform, mm-hmm. right? So you have to understand yourself and say, okay, well, what is it that turns me on in the sexual act, right? And then you have to understand that, you know, as a man, you have two distinct types of hard-ons. So you have the first one, which I will call the hard-on of the mind. It's a spontaneous created hard-on that is created by either seeing something visually or making out with a girl, but it's something where there is something happening that is going to trigger the erotic sensation in your mind that's going to spontaneously produce a hard-on, which means you're not touching it. The second type of hard-on is the one that is totally 100% physically created by touch. And that one, at any time in the sexual interaction, you have access to, right? And there's many different ways of using that to overcome performance anxiety, especially if you are doing something that will distract the woman from having her attention on you. So for an example, you're going down on a woman, right? Well, what you can easily be doing as you're going down on her is you're just getting a little bit of blood flow to your penis, right? And you can manually do it. She's never going to notice. But what's going to happen is as soon as that little bit of blood flow starts coming in, your whole nervous system just automatically down, right? The heightened nerves, because all of a sudden there is that belief system that you've now put into your brain. Because before that, what's going through your mind? Well, I hope I get hard. I hope I get hard, right? So you bring the blood flow in there yourself before there's any sort of awkward interaction that's going to happen with the girl. As soon as that blood comes in there, it's like you just get this like, okay, everything's going to be okay. And the adrenaline shuts off like instantly, right? So, you know, the thing about the penis is it's often similar to momentum, like if you're going to pull a truck, right? If you've ever seen those World's Strongest Man competitions, like they strap the straps on the super weightlifting guys and they got to pull like a semi truck. And you watch how they start. It is slow. It's one little foot at a time. But as they keep pushing forward, eventually by the end of it, they're almost running with the truck behind them. Well, it's like your penis is the same thing. Get that first 30% of blood in there. That's the hard part, right? Going from 0 to 30%, that's difficult. Going from 30% to 100%, that's easy. So what you need to focus on is just get that 20 or 30% in there, because from there, going 100% is going to be super easy. And what's going to happen is as soon as you feel that 30% blood flow, your anxiety is going to calm right down. And once your anxiety is calmed down, now you have the belief system. And you can all, and you can do all of that without the woman having any idea what you're doing. Because, you know, one of the things that a lot of guys are fearful of is, okay, now the woman's going to be doing something to me. And if I don't get hard, now it looks awkward. Well, don't set that situation up for yourself. Set yourself up to win all the time, because that's what's going to allow you to be free in your mind and for you to actually be able to relax and enjoy the experience and then not have to focus on anything. Because, I mean, there shouldn't be a thought going through your head. It should be white noise. You should be in the moment, being present, having the experience, not thinking about the experience.
Yeah. And I think that's something that a lot of young men probably struggle with. So to all the guys listening, that was just some wisdom about how you can get rid of the anxiety and perform better in the bedroom. But Eric or Mitch, why don't you kind of leave it off with promoting yourself, where they can find you on Instagram, Twitter, where they would be able to find your book. Are they able to pre-order it? And just promote yourself for a bit.
All right. Well, pre-orders are available now. They can go to my my website, www.ericeverhard.com. That's with a K. You can find, I have a free Facebook group there where I drop information for men, as well as there's a link to pre-order the book. And then anyone that wants a deeper experience, I have limited spots where I do one-on-one coaching sessions with clients. And anybody who wants to find me on Instagram, it is at Eric Everhard Official, E-R-I-K.
Perfect. Well, Eric, thank you so much for being here today, recording this with me. I think it's an awesome conversation, one that I never even thought I'd be doing at the start of my podcast, having a conversation with one of the biggest male porn stars and adult filmmakers in the world. And here we are. Funny story is you randomly found my LinkedIn profile. I'm like, this guy looks familiar, and like one of those shameful moments. And I reached out to you and I was like, are you the real Eric Everhard? And you're like, yep. And I was like, oh my gosh, that was shocking. But thank you so much for being here. That was, we should have started off the podcast with that. I'll clip it at the beginning.
There you go.
But thank you so much for being here. And to everyone listening, please check out Eric if you're, you know, if you have any self-doubts about your sexual life or you're just trying to find out more information. You know, it's good information, something that I, as a young man, have struggled with. And I think our conversation was very honest about the porn industry, sex, and all of that. So I think there's going to be a lot of value for people in this conversation.
You betcha.
Thank you, everyone, so much for tuning in to this week's episode of The Imperfect Pod. I really hope you like it. This is an area of conversation that I really wanted to go in with this podcast. I think it's a huge problem, but also a huge conversation within
men's lives. And I really want to highlight that in the future as we go forward and get lots of different perspectives. And I thank Eric very much for being willing to be so honest on this podcast. He has a book coming out soon. That's called Unleash Your Sexual Superpowers, A Porn Star's Guide to Sexual Mastery. You can pre-order that now on his website, which I've linked below. You can also find him on Instagram at Eric Everhard Official, where he also goes into more detail about performance and what it takes to be great in the bedroom. So definitely check that out as well. He also has a Facebook group, which I will also link. You can find all this on his website. But yeah, Eric, thank you so much for coming out and sharing your honest thoughts on the industry and handling my hard questions. And to everyone listening, I really hope you liked it. Please leave a review if you did. Message me if there was anything interesting. And yeah, I really hope to offer a lot more content like this to you in the future. I'm going more into these controversial, I guess, subjects and really questioning them with things that I've thought, you know, things that society thinks, and definitely asking them hard questions. So everyone, thank you so much for listening, and I hope you tune in next week, where obviously we have more exciting guests. Thanks so much, and have a lovely rest of your week.